This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're going to be talking about travel security. A lot of times when we get ready to go overseas and we get ready to take that trip over to, you know, whether it be a Europe or whether it be Asia, wherever the case is, we think about where we're going to visit. We think about what tourist attractions. But something that we need to start thinking about very, very much so these days is about our own security when we go overseas, travel security. I have on the phone with me Fred Burton. He is the vice president for intelligence at Stratfor, which is a geopolitical intelligence organization, a company who's going about the process of analyzing threats and analyzing different issues that are overseas, international issues. He also is a former State Department employee and worked for deputy director, right, Fred? Deputy director of counterterrorism at the Department of State for the Diplomatic Security Service. That's right, Fred, right?
Well, I was the deputy chief of the counterterrorism division of the State Department's Diplomatic Security Service.
Outstanding. Thanks for being on Fed Access.
Thank you for having me, Derek.
You know, travel security, I mean, as we look around all the world and we kind of see a lot of the threats of terrorism, there's a little bit word right now that maybe Al-Qaeda may start kidnapping people a little bit more. We've always had kidnapping in parts of, Colombia, Mexico, and everything else. For an American citizen or anybody, you know, when you're thinking about taking this trip, and I know on Stratfor, on your site, stratfor.com, you guys did a real good piece on travel security. When a person's thinking about traveling, what should they be thinking about?
Well, it first starts with research into your area you're traveling to. There's some wonderful government sites. For example, the State Department has a great website which gives you an overview of the country. So does the British FCO. Their foreign ministry has another good website. Each person should take the time to research the area that they're going to so they have a good situational awareness of just the general threat. And Derek, I can't emphasize that enough. I don't care if you're traveling to London or New Orleans or Miami or Kabul. You really need to make an effort to research what you're getting yourself into so you can start thinking about plans and what you should take and the kind of medicines you should bring and so forth. And also have in the back of your mind a plan to get out of that area. When things go bad in these countries, they tend to go very, very bad, like we saw in Tokyo with the nuclear meltdown. So you can't count on the government to help you in those moments of crisis. They will get around to helping you eventually, but the volume of people they have to deal with at that given time is overwhelming. So each person traveling needs to have a plan.
You know, you just made a real good point, because I think a lot of people think because we're the United States and, you know, the United States has embassies, you know, around the world. The United States has resources around the world. But those resources are very, I mean, when we look at it about in terms of the number of tourists, in an embassy, there's only maybe a few people who are, I mean, of course you have people helping out, but those resources are very, very much so finite. Is that correct?
That is correct. Each United States embassy or consulate has a regional security officer from the Diplomatic Security Service that can help. Of course, you have the Foreign Service nationals that provide a very important service to Americans traveling abroad, and then the consular services with the State Department. But when you get a crisis in these countries, it's critical that you have a plan and have a communications network to let people know where you are And then also think about how you're going to get yourself and or your family out of that affected area. And again, it's been my experience in this business, whether you're talking natural disaster or an act of terrorism or, for that matter, insurgency or war, most people think that the government is going to come in and rescue them, and that's simply not the case.
You know, with that being as we look at kind of a travel security plan, and maybe let's take it from, from a person getting ready to leave home all the way to when they're abroad. When a person thinks about travel security, because I know you kind of broke this down on your site at stratfor.com, you know, what should you be thinking about your home first before you even leave the States? What should you be considering?
Well, first, it's important for you to make sure that you've informed a trusted neighbor that you're going away, to keep an eye on your property. You should make sure you do the usuals of canceling the newspaper delivery, hold your mail if it's extended periods of time. Think about making sure you set your alarm. Hopefully you've got a system in place at your residence before you leave. The basics of having lights on a timer so you give the normalcy of occupancy. Remember to, shut your garage doors and your basic physical security measures. And then also communicate where you're going to be to those neighbors in the event that you have problems while you're away, so they know how to reach you in the event of an emergency.
You know, with all of that, I mean, a lot of people, because a lot of times when you're traveling overseas, you're going to be gone for at least a week or two. Maybe some people gone for months or things like that. Do we see a lot of people, being monitored or watched? As somebody maybe in a certain kind of neighborhood, I mean, do we see that people sometimes fall victim? You know, they leave their house and they don't take, all the proper steps. And so therefore somebody's seeing, okay, these people are not home, or, no one's visiting their house. You know, that automatically is going to drive up crime for that person, right?
Absolutely. But more importantly, some basics, like one-third of all burglaries are simply due to the fact that people forget to lock their doors.
Wow.
So
they're rushing. They're trying to get out. They've got to catch a flight.
That's right. They're thinking of getting to the airport in time to get the TSA screening, or, loading the kids in the car and just not thinking about what it is that they need to do. And in our frazzled world that we're living in today, people just make mistakes. That's why if you have a neighbor, you can make sure that neighbor stops by and make sure your doors are locked and so forth. So that's always very sound to do.
Is something that's good advice, maybe kind of to have a little travel checklist? You know how we have checklists and kind of, should we have a checklist with us that we, all right, check, I've locked the doors, check, I've done this. Is that something good that you would recommend?
It really is. We recommend here that you start thinking about that about a week ahead of time, because as the days get closer, people get much busier trying to finish up things at work before they go away and so forth. So put that post-it note by your refrigerator or your phone or door. Stick it on to make sure that you've remembered to do certain things, such as set your alarm, double-check the doors, notify a trusted neighbor. And in fact, our website, we've had tremendous response and suggestions from people since we started posting our videos online. One gentleman wrote us this morning saying that in the neighborhood where he lives, he gets a lot of old-fashioned police service by letting the local police department know when he's traveling. They actually send an officer by to check on his house. I'm not so sure you can do that anymore in places like D.C.
Right.
And New York, but there's parts of America that are still like Mayberry, RFP.
That's right. That's right. And if you do have a local officer or maybe a local station or something like that, and you do let people know, then that definitely gives them to say, hey, keep an eye out on this area because they're going to be gone for a couple weeks or so. That's a good plan.
Very good plan. And of course, your neighborhood watch programs are wonderful. And there's a great tool that we like here at Stratfor called RaidsOnline.com. That's RAIDSOnline.com. They provide crime data and statistics and trends for your neighborhood. Now,
And what's that again? Is Raids Online?
RaidsOnline.com, RAIDSOnline.com.
Okay.
And unfortunately, there's portions of the United States that are not covered, but there's a large majority of the country that is covered, and it pushes out to you crime trends for your area or neighborhood. And what's been amazing to me as I've been watching this is the scope of crime that does happen in and around you. It's actually been a very good tool for increasing situational awareness for a large number of our employees, for example, here at Stratfor. They're scattered around the country. And information is power, Derek, as you and I both know from your days in the military. And the more information you have, the better you're able to prepare.
That's right.
So it's good to know if you have a rash of burglaries in your neighborhood, because then you can harden up your physical security of your house and make double check to make sure that you've got good eyes on your residence while you're away.
As you're talking about information, and kind of what we're talking about is really intelligence gathering. So intelligence gathering not only for your community, but as we start thinking kind of going abroad. And I know you mentioned a couple of different things, but how soon? I mean, if you know you're taking an international trip, how soon, should you be monitoring what's going on? And when you're monitoring what's going on, should it be a matter of that you're looking at the news? Are you looking at BBC? Are you looking at Al Jazeera? Are you monitoring, things that's going on in the country? I mean, what should a person be doing in terms of kind of travel intelligence or travel security intelligence?
It should begin before you decide, if you have that opportunity to decide, where it is you're going, so you can have a better informed decision as to a destination point. Now, many of us at times do not have that opportunity when work sends you to certain places, but a good number of leisure travelers or vacationers do. And, for example, Mexico, which we cover quite a lot and we do a lot of work on with the cartel violence, there's sections of Mexico that you can go to and have a trouble-free vacation. There's other sections of Mexico that you need to stay out of completely due to the encroaching cartel wars that are creating a tremendous amount of violence and a lot of kidnappings and so forth, and you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So the more information you can get before you even choose a destination point, the better off you're going to be.
With all of that, and things are changing so quick. And I want to talk about that on the next break because, one minute, like Egypt, one minute things were okay, and that's a heavy tourist spot. The next minute, the place was in complete chaos. How do you prepare for that, if you're in country and everything else? We're going to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President for Intelligence at Stratfor, and you can find him at stratfor.com. stratfor.com. That's right, Fred, right?
That's correct.
My spelling days, I guess second grade did some justice for me, but you can find him at stratfor.com. He's also the former Deputy Chief of Counterterrorism at State Department of Diplomatic Security Service. We'll be taking this quick break. We'll talk a lot more about travel security when we come back. You listen to Derek T. Dortch on Fed Access on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Stephen Van Roekel is the new federal chief information officer. He says his experience has shown him how change can happen.
What I really saw at the FCC is that this notion of reimagining government in the context of the pace of innovation of private industry can be done in government. And it can be done in a way that actually saves money, saves resources. We were in lockstep with Vivek's team here on data center consolidation, our cloud-first policy, on using tools like TechStack.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC-certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Navy and Marine Corps want to explore ways to lower their IT costs by partnering with the private sector on data center consolidation. They're asking industry for ideas on how the joint data centers could shrink the 80 centers the Department of the Navy operates now all around the world into a more rational footprint while still maintaining high availability and performance. The department has been told to cut its costs for business information technology systems by 25%.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview, yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know? The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're having a conversation about travel security. A lot of times, and you know, in our country today, we encourage going overseas. We encourage traveling. We encourage, you know, experiencing other cultures around the world. And it's becoming easier for us to do that with flights and boats and everything else. But the one thing you have to think about is your security. You want to make sure you go over somewhere and you come back in one piece, or you come back and you've had a great experience rather than having a bad experience. So we're talking about travel security today on Fed Access. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. They're an intelligence firm that analyzes a lot of threats around the country, around the world, and takes a look at it, you know, from the geopolitical standpoint, from terrorist standpoints, and everything else. He's also former Deputy Chief of Counterterrorism at the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. Fred, before the break, we were kind of talking about the whole dynamic of, you know, countries. And you know, when you get into a country and you've kind of done your homework and you've secured your home, you've checked out maybe some things with State Department, you get in country and, you know, for example, Egypt. You know, Egypt is a heavy terrorist spot. All of a sudden, everything breaks out. All heck breaks out. What do you do? I mean, how do you secure your situation then?
Well, the first thing to do is to make sure that you've registered with the State Department that you are in country, so they have a good fix on your location, and they can help you at some point in time facilitate your exit from that country. Most people forget to do that or don't want Big Brother to know where they're located, which at times I understand from a privacy perspective. But when things turn bad, it's been my experience, turn really, really bad at times. So I would encourage folks to register with the State Department and that embassy once they get into country. Secondly, there's some wonderful services out there. I like a company by the name of Global Rescue out of Boston. They have some wonderful reviews, and this is a private company that you can sign up for their service ahead of time, and they've got very reasonable rates, especially for students that are studying abroad and so forth. And in the event of a medical emergency, which most people forget, but if you're in places like Yemen or in the Middle East or in Africa and you have some medical emergency crop up out of the blue, these folks will arrange to get you home. If you're on a safari, or if you're camping, or if you're out in the mountains, or you're in a war-torn area, they will come and get you physically. And the service is very, very reasonable. It's nice to know. It's also, from a psychological perspective, gives you that ability to call and know you're going to get somebody to come and get you. In your remote areas, Derek, we use these little spot messengers here at Strat4 to keep tabs on our employees. It's a GPS-based service that you can send text and you can plot your people in areas. If you're going to remote places of the world, they're wonderful tools to be able to communicate with people back home. Like I said, we use them for our staff that are traveling in some really hot spots around the world, or just very, very rural areas around the globe. Think about your medicines, because you can get to places, like you and I both know, where you don't have access to basics such as antibiotics and so forth. So think about that ahead of time. And then always in the back of your mind, have a plan to get yourself out of trouble. Where are you going to go? How are you going to get there? With an alternative route of transportation. I've seen this time and time again in emergency planning in my experience that folks will say, well, I'll go out of that city this way. Well, what do you do if that way is clogged? We saw that in New York City, for example, during the blackout. What do you do if the subway is shut or the bridges close or the tunnels are closed in Manhattan? How do you get out of New York City? And that same kind of concept applies whether you're in New York City or in Sana'a, Yemen.
You know, I mean, you hit on some really, really targeted points. And what it sounds like, you know, for your own safety, I mean, you really do need to do some advanced homework and kind of make sure you don't put yourself in dangerous situations, because the situation can change in a heartbeat. I mean, we see that in London with a terrorist bombing, Spain, terrorist bombing, wherever the case is, or uprising. Do you recommend that maybe certain areas, you know, people say, well, you know what, maybe it's not time. Maybe I should hold back on going to this region right now. I mean, you know, it is sometimes that's the best preventive, you know. So, I mean, sometimes I know we can avoid it if it's for work. But if we're going over maybe for a kind of trip or personal reasons, you know, as we look at a situation, is it best just to hold tight for a minute?
Absolutely. Your best position is always not to put yourself in that vulnerable spot to begin with. Again, you can think of things like what happened in Japan with the nuclear meltdown,
right,
or your natural disaster kind of event in places like in our own country with Katrina, or the blackout in New York City, for example. I think we all like to think we are here, even inside the United States, relatively safe and secure. But, you know, you think about the concept of, the power grid goes down in the D.C. area, which I lived in for a long period of time, or there's some sort of strategic strike by a terrorist organization and the grid goes down. How are you going to get home? How are you going to provide for your family and so forth? So it's amazing to me how most people go through life without thinking of having a contingency plan, and then all of a sudden something will happen and they're looking towards the government to help them. And for the most part, you know, our nation is capable of that, but it just takes time to get that bureaucracy moving and to get those resources and logistics in gear.
You know, when you're out in another country and you're kind of just, you know, out and about, you know, do you recommend, you know, and given that we're at a point now where these things can happen, a tsunami can happen or whatever, I mean, things are just happening and we can't really predict it anymore. Should a person have with them, like maybe if they're carrying a backpack or certain things like that, you know, how should you, you know, keep your look a certain way? I mean, should you make you, you know, keep your presence lower? Should you kind of lower your profile? Do you want to look less touristy? You know, do you want to make sure you don't have certain things in your backpack? Do you want to make sure you have cash on you? How do you keep yourself secure in terms of who you are, given the fact that Americans could possibly be targeted in certain countries for either terrorist attacks or a crime or whatever?
It goes back to your research of that area that you're traveling to understand the culture and the language and some basics such as dress. You know, in some place of the world, you don't want to walk around with you know, that Nikon camera hanging around your neck with the Rolex on your wrist. You want to blend into your environment. You want to, in essence, hide in plain sight. You want to blend into the environment. So you're not an easy mark to the common thieves, and they could run up and steal your backpack. So, but it's important to have some basics in mind, such as a throwdown wallet, a ragged old wallet with a $20 bill in it. So, in case you're robbed, you can throw that down and have your cash either in a belly belt or a money belt. You want to think about photocopying your passport. So, in the event that your passport is stolen, you have a copy of your original passport, so you can go to that embassy or consulate and get another one quickly.
And hold it right there, Fred. We need to take a quick break, but I want to come back to what you're just saying about kind of making sure you have your documents secure and making sure that your stuff doesn't get stolen, because I think a lot of Americans run into that kind of situation where they get their critical documents stolen, and then that's a whole nother situation you have to deal with.
That's right.
We'll be right back. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. He's also the former Deputy Chief of Counterterrorism at the Diplomatic Security Service, the Department of State. We're talking about travel security on Fed Access, about how to make sure that when you go abroad, you keep yourself safe and you get yourself back safe. We'll be right back on Fed Access after this break.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Hey, this is Mike Rowe, and I'm not wearing my jeans right now. In fact, I'm not wearing any pants at all, but more on that later. Did you know that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetimes? As the celebrity ambassador of Lee National Denim Day, it's my job to let you know that you could help us change that number by donating what you normally spend on a pair of jeans. All you have to do is go to denimday.com, enter an amount, and click donate. It's that easy. And look at that, we're out of time. Looks like you'll just have to go to denimday.com to find out why I'm half naked.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort AP Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
What is the mission of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement Initiative? How is the Guard improving its operations, becoming more efficient, and promoting organizational excellence? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative at the National Guard Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour. Cloud Computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how Cloud Advantage for Government, the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com, brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
You can help the Army Historical Foundation honor the soldiers of yesterday and today. Go to armyhistory.org to learn how you can help build the National Museum of the U.S. Army. The museum will be the Army's national landmark, preserving the sacrifice of every man and woman who has worn the Army uniform since 1775. Visit armyhistory.org today and honor the Army's service of every generation.
IBM's supercomputer Watson may make us feel inadequate on quiz shows, but our brains actually outperform even the most powerful computers in many respects. The human brain packs incredibly nimble learning and processing power into a relatively small space using tiny amounts of energy. Dewika Kazum of Stanford University says today's digital computers will never really compare for a wide variety of tasks.
If we do brain simulation in real time using powerful supercomputers, it will basically require a dedicated nuclear power plant.
Kazum is part of a team engineering devices that mimic the versatile signaling strengths, learning ability, and size of the connections between nerve cells in the brain.
We try to extend the capabilities of information technology beyond digital logic.
The devices may also give us a better understanding of our brains. For more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about a really, really important topic, you know, especially for those who make, you know, make decisions to go overseas, I should say. Travel security. A lot of times we don't think about this, but whether you're flying abroad, whether you're on a cruise, or wherever you go, when you go to another country, you need to always make sure that you're safe and sound. You need to do some travel security planning and some emergency planning, security planning to make sure that you have a great trip, but to make sure that you're safe and sound. A lot of things happen abroad that people don't know about, and we're trying to make sure we give you some good tips to survive these things today. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor, and Stratfor, you can find him at stratfor.com. They are a great intelligence service. They provide a geopolitical analysis. They provide threat analysis from a lot of different things that's going on around the world. He's also the former deputy chief of counterterrorism at the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. Fred, you know, we were talking about documents, and I don't think sometimes people think about how important documents and keeping your documents safe and secure. You were saying that you should have maybe a copy, a throwdown wallet that only has a little cash in it and not all your credit cards in it, but also you should have maybe a copy of your passport, but you're not taking your passport out there with you. Is that what you were saying?
In essence, you want to make sure that you have, in the unfortunate event that you're engaged in a street robbery or someone comes up with a knife or a gun, you want to be able to throw that wallet down and hand that bad guy something that's not going to leave you without any cash or credit cards and all your driver's license, identity, and so forth. And then when it comes to the U.S. passport, which is the most valued passport when you're traveling, simply because it's such a good identity document to international thieves and terrorists and so forth, there's a good number of them stolen. We get emails here and calls at Stratfor all the time with folks that have had their personal effects stolen and not sure what to do next. It's good to have a photocopy of, for example, your passport, so in the event that you do get your passport stolen, you can show up at the U.S. consulate or embassy and say, you know, this is a copy of my original passport that was stolen and so forth. It helps expedite your issuance of a secondary passport as well as, you know, get the embassy to quickly kind of help you. It just helps with the process. And the same goes with medicines. For example, I've seen folks stick everything they have in one fanny pack or one small little knapsack when they're traveling, and the next thing you know, that's stolen, and then literally they have their keys to their house, their credit cards, you know, everything that they have from a day-to-day, everyday carry perspective goes down the street with that thief. So think about splitting up your medicines, leave some back at the hotel, put some in a safety deposit box if you're staying for a few weeks in a hotel and they have that kind of availability. You just got to think ahead and know, you know, in the event I get my wallet stolen, how am I going to get cash? Things like that. And most people don't think ahead when it comes to that kind of planning.
So really, and what you're saying is that, you know, be careful about what you're carrying with you. Be careful about, you know, the documents you have on you, how much cash you have on you, your cards. Don't carry all your personal effects as if you're back in the States and you're just going to work or something like that. Really kind of plan out what you have on your body just in case you are a victim of a robbery or something like that. You're not completely devastated and you lose everything.
That's correct, because it's going to take time for that credit card company to get you another card. It's going to take time to get cash. And again, establishing identity. Think of your day-to-day life today, Derek, and most people put yourself in a place like Kathmandu, Nepal, or Seoul, or Beijing, and then the next thing you know, you have all your personal identity documents and all your cash stolen. What are you going to do?
You know, as we're thinking about that, and say, listen, you go into a point where you know, I say, I don't have everything on me. I leave some things at the hotel. But some of the countries that people go to, the hotel is a security risk. I mean, you know, hotels are not as secure. I mean, they may not be at a Marriott. They may be at a local hotel. They may be at an environment that, you know, where the people are shady in the hotel. You know, how do you ensure that where you're staying is even a safe location? And what should you do with that kind of situation?
It goes back to the research of your area. For example, and to your point, I mean, we've recently saw the horrific terrorist attack at the Intercon in Kabul, and then we had the hotel attacks in Mumbai, India. We've had attacks on the hotels in Islamabad. You know, that appears to be the new kind of Al-Qaeda variant strategic strike on multiple targets, you know, soft targets, the hotels. So, when you're looking at picking a hotel, know whether or not that hotel or that area has had previous problems, for example, in Mumbai or in Islamabad, and then think about where you're going to stay on the floor. Should you be in a high floor or low floor? You know, for example, the third floor is a perfect kind of floor. You can get yourself off of that quickly. Most of your fire and rescue units can throw a ladder up to the third floor. Worst comes to worst, you can figure out a way to climb off the balcony from a third floor. You're up any higher, you may be trapped. You want to minimize your time in the hotel lobby area, and especially in places like Pakistan or India, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines. You want to not spend a lot of time hanging around the hotel bar, to be blunt. Those are the kinds of places that these terrorists tend to target and gravitate to. So minimize your time and kind of reduce your exposure in these locations. But again, it comes back to understanding the area you're going to, understanding the risk that you're placing yourself or your family into, and then think about some reasonable precautions.
You mentioned something, and some people may think, "Wow, you know, I'm coming into this country, and I want to mingle with the people." And you know, we've seen in Morocco, we've seen in other places that you know, terrorists will hit hotels, they will hit restaurants, they'll hit certain areas, and that's recent months. You know, so while you're there, are we kind of, depending on what's happening in the country, are we at a different state right now that you really have to be aware of where you're going to be sitting, whether it be a lounge or a bar or a restaurant or certain things like that? Do we kind of say, well, listen, you know what? You may not want to be at every single location. Is that where we're at this point in time?
Absolutely. You know, you take the hotel sector. They are the ultimate soft target today. We've seen the major shift of terrorist targeting to certain very high-profile hotels where you have a lot of Westerners staying, a lot of Americans, perhaps a lot of military, a lot of defense contractors and so forth. So that may not be the hotel you want to pick. Maybe you want a little lower profile hotel that doesn't draw so many Westerners or Americans to that specific site. Having said that, there's a trade-off. You look at some of these hotels overseas, they don't have basics such as good locks or sprinkler systems. So, again, that gets back into the research that you're going to place on your trip. You know, how important are you going to take this from a security perspective? I think in this day and age, it behooves every international traveler just not to accept where the company is going to book you in because it's the cheapest room that they can find. Do your own research and make an issue out of it if you don't think that's a good idea. Those are the kinds of things that people need to take their own personal responsibility in and recognize that at times it's not the company. The company's looking at how to save money, therefore they're going to book you here, and that may not be the best place you want to be. Same way with vacation travelers. You know, in our troubled economy here, everybody's trying to save money where they can, think about where you're going to put your family in certain areas. I mean, same goes to even domestic travel here in the United States. You know, you and I both know there's places in and around the district or New York City or L.A. or Miami or New Orleans you want to stay away from.
You can be in a bad spot really, really quickly, and it can change your whole world all of a sudden. We're talking about travel security and kind of running into a lot of good points right here. We're talking about it with Fred Burton. He's a vice president for intelligence at Stratfor. You can find them at stratfor.com. They're an intelligence service. They do a lot of threat analysis, do a lot of great work in terms of analyzing what's going on around the world. We're talking about this. He's also former chief, deputy chief of the counterterrorism unit at the Department of State, the Diplomatic Security Service. When we come back, we'll keep on talking about this topic, then talk about it, you know, in the guise of students, you know, about how do we avoid getting targeted in a number of different ways. We'll be right back after this break on Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Here's Doug Roseborough, Chief Technology Officer, FAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Informatica.
I think with cloud computing that you'll see more use of thin clients as far as desktops are concerned, that a lot of the applications and data that are on desktops will be moved to the cloud.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Government leaders have one thing in common. They know data is their biggest asset, but that asset is growing exponentially. Data is expected to grow by as much as 44 times over the next year to a staggering 35.2 zettabytes. Welcome to the era of big data. How will your agency effectively process the volume of data to support missions, serve citizens, and provide the right information to the right individuals? Informatica helps government agencies to move, take in, and manage their data, regardless of how much, what kind, or where it is. Visit Informatica.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Quest Government Services is becoming CenturyLink. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and financial strength, we are linking IT leaders to a better future. Your link to the future begins here. One company, stronger connected. See the benefits of partnering with us at quest.com/federal. That's QWEST.com/federal.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Declassification Center at the National Archives and Records Administration says new technology, processes, and data analysis tools have let it almost double the number of records it's able to review for declassification. The new center processed 59 million pages of classified records in the first 6 months of this year, almost as many as it handled in all of last year. So far, the center's been able to declassify 92% of the records it's reviewed.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Join Alan Greenspan, the former chair of the Federal Reserve System, as he discusses the intersection of economics and IT at the Innovation Nation Forum, August 23rd at the DC Convention Center. Also there, the Merit Awards will recognize the best idea to use IT to improve government with a $50,000 cash prize. Shake IT up. Register at meritalk.com. That's MERITALK.com.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a really, really interesting conversation about travel security, about what you should do when you're getting ready to go overseas, and honestly, what you should do anytime you travel. Anytime if you travel domestically or internationally, these tips can keep you safe and secure and let you have a good trip. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president for intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. They do a lot of great work in terms of intelligence, threat analysis, and everything else. He's a former deputy chief of the counterterrorism unit for the Department of State Diplomatic Security Service. Fred, you know, we're kind of talking about this whole dynamic of, you know, preparation, planning, low profile, and everything else. You know, there's also a piece in here, and I've been reading a lot of this lately about, especially for students who go overseas and they're doing study abroad programs, about now the targeting of students, not only for terrorism purposes, but also for possible espionage purposes in the future. I mean, people being targeted in a number of different ways. And, you know, we have students who are going over on government programs, or they may be studying abroad doing certain things. How prevalent is that? Is that a serious threat?
It is, depending upon where you're going. For example, you'll have hostile intelligence agencies, for example, the Chinese, that routinely do that, look for those kinds of students that may end up at some point in time in the military or in the intelligence service or the foreign service. So they tend to gravitate towards those schools overseas that may have that kind of kid. For example, places like the London School of Economics. And they'll look for kids at specific locations. Now, and the Chinese hold no pride of ownership there. The other hostile intelligence services, such as the Russians, are very similar. So, for example, if you have an American student that's studying political science inside a university in Moscow, that's the kind of student that the Russian SVR, their FSB, their intelligence service would be interested in and developing a relationship with. And a lot of these schools, Derek, what do they use? They use professors as spotters. You know, they'll typically have a professor that's on a stipend or actual contract with an intelligence service to identify those kinds of kids that could be recruited for some sort of long-term placement. And it's a brilliant strategy on the part of some of these intelligence services, especially the Chinese. they'll take years knowing that that kid will eventually wind up in the State Department or the CIA or the DOD in some capacity. So it's really a brilliant strategy.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking a lot of, you know, places, whether it be universities or otherwise, you know, for and who are sending schools who, you know, either have schools abroad or sending students abroad, they're not really teaching students about this. I mean, they're not really kind of putting this in his head, you know, about who you should be affiliating yourself with. I mean, who you should be concerned with, you know, being concerned about what kind of questions are being asked about you, about your future and everything else. I mean, would you say that's the case?
Oh, absolutely. We have a tremendous number of universities and colleges around the globe that follow our writings here at Stratfor. And I would say that 95 to 98% of most universities are blind to that kind of threat.
With all of that, I mean, you know, if you're a student thinking about going abroad and kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to be gone for 6 months or so, you know, or, you know, 6 months to a year, you may be getting immersed into the language and everything else. How do you, and I've had students come to me about this, about, you know, they want to get immersed. They want to get out. They don't want to necessarily be in the confines of the university, because we talk about, you know, learning the language and kind of being, you know, deeply involved in society. I mean, how do you gauge that balance between being deeply involved in an international society, but then at the same time protecting yourself as an American student and not getting yourself targeted either towards a terrorist threat, kidnapping, or a counterintelligence threat in terms of espionage? I mean, it seems to be a very tough dynamic.
It really is. I think it boils down to awareness. Now, I have seen an interesting shift with a fair number of colleges inside the United States with actually creating specific positions at universities that have a overseas security and safety advisor. And most of these positions are former State Department or CIA officers that look out for these campuses, because, you know, the amount of campuses outside of the United States today and some of our major universities are tremendous. And they're not only looking out for the terrorism threat and vulnerability, but also crime, and then to a lesser degree the espionage risk, because again, it's one of those kinds of touchy subjects that people are really scared to talk about, really don't know what to do about it. But again, it boils down to having a general awareness of where you are and the hostile intelligence agency, the foreign counterintelligence threat to you, because you're studying certain topics in certain areas around the globe.
Thank you so much, Fred. We've been talking to Fred Burton. He's a vice president of intelligence at Stratfor. You can find all this information about travel security. Fred, I think you got a couple videos already about travel security up, right?
We do, and they're free content on our website at www.stratfor.com. I'd encourage anybody that's listening that wants to learn more about this to take a look. And we also would welcome any other suggestions that people may have. It's been amazing to me the kind of readers' responses we're getting back on things to have safe travels around the globe. And we intend to compile them all into some sort of list and push them back out.
Thanks so much, Fred. He's the author of a couple of books. I'm just going to put that out there, Fred. You can find the books on Stratfor.com, one about the catching of an assassin, another of the confessions of a counterterrorism agent. Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor, Stratfor.com is where you can find it. He's also the former Deputy Chief of Counterterrorism at the Department of State Diplomatic Security Service, Fred Burton. Fred, as usual, we're going to have you back soon, because there's so much to talk about, so many issues to talk about. So we will definitely be back to you in a couple months.
Well, thank you so much, Derek. We appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.